Welcome to Tell Me Your Story, new paradigms for a new world, giving you choices and knowledge of those choices to help make your dreams come true. I'm Richard Dugan, your host, and I thank you so much for joining us here on the program. You do know that we come your way Sundays at 7 a.m. and 7 p.m. and Monday mornings at 1 a.m. on this fine radio station, as well as the podcasts, which are available both on the homepage of richarddugan.com as well as the radio shows page. Also on SoundCloud, iTunes, TuneIn Radio, Spotify, Stitcher, I think Player FM, several other locations as well. We encourage you to listen to the interviews, listen to the entire interview, the podcast. If you're listening to the radio broadcast, you're only getting 50 minutes, and unfortunately, you're not getting the whole thing. Sometimes these interviews run longer, so you're going to want to tune in. You're going to want to tune into those podcasts, and you can download them too. When you're listening to the SoundCloud versions there on the player, you're going to see a little grocery cart in the upper right-hand corner. That is a link to our guest's website. We'll be giving you that link as well here on the program as we begin talking with our guest as well. And also, if you'd like to support this radio broadcast, this podcast, this endeavor, this effort to change the world and to provide those new ways of living, we are not only extremely grateful. I cannot tell you how appreciative I am of those who have supported this broadcast financially over the last many months that we've been making that available. But also, I am also grateful to you if you are thinking about doing it and when you do that. Thank you. It's fantastic to see that kind of support coming through. And so if you can help us out, wonderful. There's a PayPal link on both the homepage as well as the missions page. If you're just listening to this program for the first time, go to the missions page as you're listening to the interview and read what we're all about. And then go to listen to some of the other interviews as well. And then if you can support us in that financial way, great. If not, we will take the energetic support as well. We are not quite that picky. Financial certainly keeps us moving forward, but the energetic does too. Hey, you just never know what will be coming around the corner. With all of that said, we have a guest who's returning. It's the trifecta, ladies and gentlemen. She's returning for the third time on Tell Me Your Story. Aura Nedrich, we're going to be talking about Live True, a mindfulness guide to authenticity. Aura, thank you so much for rejoining us again for the third time. This is the third year in a row that you've been on our program. Thanks for being with us.
Hi, Richard, and thank you for having me back. I love that, the trifecta. That is a good one.
Absolutely. Well, I'll tell you, it's very interesting when I think about all of the people I've had on the program. And many times we do have guests who return. I've had Greg Braden on probably 8 or 10 times in the 20-plus years I've been interviewing him overall. But on this program, I know I've had him on 8, maybe 10 times, and we're going to have him back again in the summer of 2019 as well. But I like...
Wonderful. He's wonderful. I can see why you've done that.
Oh, yeah. And I have to tell you that I'm going to say that I'm not one of the originators, but I know that I got on board very early in his career, starting out with the Zero Point. A dear friend of mine back in Phoenix gave me a set of videos, VCR tapes, his lecture on the Zero Point. That's how we got started. Now, you have an institution that you have created, the Institution for Transformational Thinking. Now, someone said to me not long ago, Aura, Richard, you need to start using, instead of using the word change, because if it can be changed in one direction, if you will, it can be changed back the other way. Start using the word transformation. And I thought, that's an interesting take on that. Tell me, what is your concept, your idea, your definition of that word transformation?
Well, I love the word, and yes, it's so interchangeable to change. I mean, it means change and altering and, you know, metamorphosis. And those are really wonderful words that conjure up this evolution, these transitions, this what I call from being to becoming, that we are constantly evolving. And transformation to me is that. You know, I love that quote by philosopher Heraclitus, the only constant in life is change, and that we are always changing, which is why we shouldn't always get so caught up in thinking that things are going to stay the same, because most often than not, they don't. So that's really my take on transformation.
Well, and I couldn't agree with you more. And at the same time, I also think about the discussions that I've had over the 40 plus years, not only in this industry, but even before that, at the age of 17, when I began what I refer to as my search, the conversations about duality. And the more I think about it, the more I begin to really understand the concept, as I've read about it numerous times, especially in this one book, my metaphysical primer, Autobiography of a Yogi, the description of Maya or illusion, or as one of my favorite comedians likes to phrase it, illusion, Lewis Black. And I think about it in the context going from the macrocosmos to the microcosmos. In the macrocosmos, when we're looking through the Hubble telescope at the universe moving about and things having near hits and near misses and all of those, and colliding and exploding and supernovas and the spinning galaxies and on and on and on. And I think, you know, the universe doesn't have judgment on any of that activity. That's just the way the universe functions. And on the microcosmic level is the same thing. The trillions of cells and the atoms that make up those cells, they're just doing their thing. I even ask people, what do you think? What governmental system do you think our cells of our body function under? And I have to start by saying, and you must throw out democracy. It does. If it functioned under the system of democracy, the human body and all life and all would cease to exist, because every single cell would want to do its own thing, would want its individuality. And in the macrocosmic perspective, the same thing. I came up with the term interdependentism. And what this, and this goes into what we just talked about just a moment ago about change. What this does for me, and I don't know about you, is it allows me to transcend the emotional hooks, if you will, of the frustrations, if you will, of change.
Well, yeah. I mean, I love that you bring up, you know, my favorite subject, the cosmos, you know, and I love the Carl Sagan quote, we are made of star stuff, you know, and I think that, you know, the sort of the, you know, the duality, the juxtaposition of us to the cosmos, we can feel so insignificant, we can feel so small, but yet there is that wonderful quote also by Sagan, you know, that the universe gets to know itself through us. And we are connected, you know, there's no doubt about it. You know, this is the state that is called oneness, unity consciousness, whatever that means for you. I don't like too many labels, or practically any labels at all for that matter. I like to hear people's personal interpretation of what this life experience means to them. But I love to talk about the numinous. I love to talk about something other than the small self, the greater self, which really, for me, is the cosmos, is the universe. It's this, you know, what you talk about, macro, micro, but we're also talking about space and time that feels infinite to me. And the beauty of the life journey is that we are on this discovery. We are on this evolution, just as the planet is, just as the cosmos are. This is a work in progress. We are that, as is the universe, as is the cosmos. We are constantly evolving, changing, and to use the word that we both agreed we liked better, transforming ourselves.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The Institute for Transformational Thinking is our guest, Aura Nedrich. And changing the world one thought at a time. I want to get into that as well as we continue here. I want to remind our listeners, you can go to theiftt.org. Gee, I wonder what that stands for. How about the Institute for Transformational Thinking? It has been said in the ancient wisdom teachings going back millennia, that, and I can only use the one quote that I'm familiar with, in the beginning was the Word. And there are those who interpret that as saying that it wasn't a verbal utterance, but that it was a thought. And that's where it all began. We're not even going to say, well, but where'd the thought come from and who thought it? And so on. We're going to set that. That's another. We'll have you back to discuss that one later. It's everything started with a thought.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And that's what I say in Live True. And I love to talk about that. We have even been talking about that with my first book, Says Who, which is all about transformational thinking, really, by transforming, first and foremost, our negative and fear-based thoughts. You know, that's how we begin to change those thoughts that really serve no useful purpose for us. But then you fast forward to Live True, and I do say that a vision starts with a single thought that we hold in our mind's eye. And I look to the great visionaries and those that created, you know, great contributions to mankind and masterpieces, be it in the arts, you know, the Chopins, the Galileos, the Michelangelos, the Rembrandts, you know, there's so many, the Nikola Teslas, you know, can go on and on and on. Einstein, I quote him a lot. He's one of my favorites in that, you know, when I think of the theory of relativity, these visions that we then reap the benefits from, we've been bestowed the great visions of visionaries, but it started with a single thought in the mind's eye. A thought comes into our mind, and from there is where creativity blossoms and where the imagination soars and the vision gets taken off into, you know, this manifestation outside of ourselves. And each and every one of us has that ability. You know, we can hold these thoughts in our mind's eye and manifest it outside of ourselves. So, you know, really what I'm saying is, you know, you don't have to be, you know, extraordinary or think that you have to cure the, you know, cancer, which maybe you can, for all we know. I might be speaking to someone out there who has that vision in their mind's eye, and they will manifest it, and we will all be the beneficiaries of that vision.
Mm-hmm.
So I love the power of thought, and I love your way of describing that, that if, in fact, that's how the universe was created, by a single thought, and you're right, we can continue to that conversation, which can take us far out there, you know, beyond the cosmos and existentialism, is whose thought was it?
Yeah.
Who's the thinker?
Yeah.
Well, you know?
And it takes us, obviously, into an area where we obviously are then trying to understand who we are, where we came from, why we're here, and then, of course, where we're going.
Mm-hmm.
And in the ancient wisdom teachings, which are, on the one hand, independent of one another, depending upon the philosophy from which it comes, at the same time, interconnected because, well, gee, they're all here. They're all, they've all been transmitted, if you will, you know, into the written word, if you will, through people who are connected. Universally, spiritually, metaphysically, they are all connected. So it's no wonder that these messages have that, what they call the silver or golden thread that runs through them. So
mm-hmm.
it's no wonder they all match up,
right.
Or you know that they're all sort of synchronistic, in mm-hmm. that respect. It's really, for me, very, very fascinating. And of course, I sit here as a guy of 59 years of age, a scant 59 years on the planet, less than a puff of smoke, folks. And I read about and I talk with and I listen to all this information about how I can activate the law of attraction and bring to me all those wonderful things that I want, six-figure income in my bank account, and the things that I have been wanting to bring into my life for years. And then I hear, if you just do the work you love to do, then the prosperity and or the money will, the wealth will come. And I've been doing this for, well, since I was 17, you know, mm-hmm. and I'm still, on the one hand, I'm still waiting. But on the other hand, I sit here and I go, but how can I be sure that it's in my best interest? How can I be sure that that is part of what my life's purpose of service is about?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That is so good. I call that the sweet spot. Oh. You know, there is that wonderful place, you know, even from a sort of thinking or non-thinking perspective, you know, in a meditative state, what's called the space between the thoughts, you know, because we're so busy thinking that we're so ruled by the mind and the activity in it. But I like the place between. I like that pause, that space, that there is nothing in there that we project onto it. So when you talk about what you've been doing for so long, and how do we even know? You know, we constantly are aspiring. We're constantly desiring. We're constantly wanting. And that's really what mindfulness is about, because it's being in the present moment with total awareness, having the awareness that we're always trying to jump out of the moment because we think another moment's going to be better, or we think having more money is going to be better. And by the way, mind you, I don't have a problem with being ambitious and striving to reach your goals, whatever they may be for you. Mm-hmm. The problem with that is oftentimes we miss out on that sweet spot or that space between because we perceive that as not enough. And where we are right now isn't enough. Now, it's all relative. There's some people that are really struggling and having a really hard time. And, you know, I feel compassionate about that. But for most people that are in a pretty good space and pretty okay, if you will, they're the ones that torture themselves the most because they feel that it's just not enough or good enough.
I heard a report just actually prior to this interview that stated that for the first time in a decade, and this goes to what we've been talking about, the number of billionaires has actually decreased. Mm. Actually decreased. Of course, the top two billionaires on the planet are still the same. I can't remember his name, but he's the owner of Amazon, and then Bill Gates is right behind. And
isn't Amazon Bezos?
Yeah, yes. Yes, indeed. Okay. He may or may not be the richest man in the world following his divorce, but that's a whole nother story.
Well, it might put just a slight dent in his fortune.
Exactly. But I thought that was interesting that for the first time in a decade has it dropped. And I think it was some 2%, something like that. It was still around, what was it, 200, 300, maybe. It was maybe more than that, but it doesn't matter. And yet we sit here, those of us who basically are lucky enough to have one or two digits in our bank account holding on, you know, the old proverbial, you know, one paycheck away from homelessness or what have you. And I'm living in that space. But at the same time, I'm not living in that mindset. And that, to me, is the biggest difference between not just myself and this whole thing, but between myself today and myself of quite literally 20 years ago. Because in my first marriage, there was nothing but stress and suffering and anguish when it came to finances and, you know, paying the bills and all of this kind of stuff. Whereas today I'm sitting here and I continue to tell myself, and I want you to elaborate on this. I continue to tell myself, going back to what we started with at the beginning of this interview, this is all of this, regardless of what level I'm at personally, it's all temporary. It's going to change. Do I know which direction? No, I don't. But I know that I want to change it to go in the upward direction. Talk to us about that.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, you know, change is constant, so that's inevitable. So we have to know that, so that when we are in places that might seem that we're stuck, we have to be very mindful of the thoughts we tell ourselves when we're in it. Like, this is never going to change. I'm never going to get what I want. I'm never going to realize what I want, and on and on and on. And those are the thoughts that really don't support us in believing that we can manifest what we want. So there's the whole mind set around that, and that's really my wheelhouse. I try and help people really be mindful and aware of the thoughts that they're telling themselves. But, you know, we have to be very cognizant of what's fueling us. You know, if we are constantly trying to chase our tails, or we are constantly trying to go after, you know, what you mentioned, Maya, the illusion, you know, or supporting the false self to be something that we're not, which is really what Live True is all about, then we're always going to be in that state of hunger, that state of want that I spoke about. So it's very important to be aware of what it is we really want. You know, I ask that question. I think it's really important to bring the questions specifically to ourselves first and foremost. What do I want? You know, questions like, who am I?
Mm-hmm.
Which I think is a very meaningful, spiritual, almost biblical question to ask oneself, whatever biblical means to you. That means holy and sacred to me, not in a written book sense, but just what is sacred to me? Who am I? What is it that I want? What do I think is going to make me happy? What is it that I feel I don't have? You know, we have to ask ourselves these questions, you know, and if we really do feel we want more, which we are very entitled to have whatever we want, by the way, it is very personal to us. It's when we go into that unhappy place, that chipping away at our unhappiness because we feel we haven't arrived yet. We're not there yet. We have to be careful that we don't go there, because what we want is we want to preserve the energy that fuels us to reach the goals and the desires that we really want to fulfill in our lifetime. And I support that wholeheartedly. I support people going after what they want and helping themselves along the way so that they can manifest the best of themselves. In the vision, going back to what I said, the vision that you hold in your mind's eye, what is it? What is that vision that you hold for yourself and for the world?
We're going to talk
personal.
Yeah, we're going to talk more about that as we continue here on Tell Me Your Story. We're talking with Aura Nadrich, and we are talking about Live True, the latest work that she has out, and we're going to continue this wonderful conversation here on Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. I only have one piece of advice for you, folks. Stay tuned.
Stories, I'll do my best to understand you.
And welcome back to Tell Me Your Story. We're talking with Aura Nadrich, and we're talking about Live True, her latest work, as well as IFTT, that is the Institute for Transformational Thinking. Thank you for staying with us, Aura. Before we jump back into our subject matter, I love getting a definition of terms and so forth. And of course, we talked about transformation, but I want to get a little more personal with you. Can you tell me, what is the origin of your first name, Aura, and what does it mean?
My name, Aura, O-R-A, a lot of people assume that it's spelled A-U-R-A, although it's not that different, is that it means light. and gold. And I found out, you know, when I was much younger, someone said to me, hey, do you know what your name means? And I knew it meant light and gold. And they said it means a prayer in Latin, which is that phrase, ora pro nobis, pray for us. And so I added that to the definition of my name, light, gold, and a prayer. And that's what my name means.
Well, I like it. I like it a lot. I even suggested maybe it was short, because everybody's sometimes the. I've never been referred to as Dick or Richard, Rich or Rick. It's always been Richard. But I'm thinking, well, maybe yours is short for Oracle. Which
I like that. I've been called that. I've been called that by people that know me, and I'll take that. That works for me. You know, I also want to say, Richard, that you know people ask me a lot about my name and. I tell, you know, some people sometimes the story of when I was a young girl, when I was little, when I was in elementary school, you know, everybody around me was like, and nothing wrong with these names, by the way, Susie and Betsy and, you know, Debbie and all the names that I wanted my name to be, you know, because my name was different and it was unusual. And when you're little, what do you want? You want to fit in. You want to be like everybody else, you know. Now I can say, you know, I'm thrilled that I have that name. And yes, it was given to me at birth. I didn't make it up. And no, my parents weren't hippies, which people have asked me. So I'm very happy with my name. I wear it very comfortably.
And I have to say that it fits, obviously, in the sense that what we are talking about is something that is... I maybe it's becoming this. You may be more aware of this than I, but right now it seems as though it's still a bit outside the mainstream, the general public hasn't quite embraced it the way they have other things. I mean, I flash back to the 80s and the impending, and it wasn't an impending disaster or anything, but the impending harmonic convergence, for example. And then another decade or so later, it was the turn of the century, you know, and which year is it? Is it 2000 or is it 2001? Are the computers all going to crash and we're all going to be in the dark? You know, and those kind. And then in 2012, another decade or so, the Mayan calendar was coming to an end. My wife had the most wonderful and humorous perspective on that. She says the guy that was crafting it and that was chiseling away at the calendar, finally he just got fed up and he said, I've had enough. I'm not doing it anymore. And he walked away. That's why the calendar ended, out of frustration.
Oh, that's funny.
But we've had these different events, you know, that have sort of been spaced out about 10, 12, 14 years apart, at least since I have been a metaphysician. And I'm wondering... From this kind of perspective, with a lot of the guests we've had on the program, including Greg Braden, who talks a lot about, for example, the zero point and the choice point, all these different points, the whole aspect of transformational thinking, do you see anything in particular that you are just aware of? I'm not talking about anybody has been predicting another harmonic convergence or another... kind of turn of the century or ending of the Mayan calendar, but are you aware of the process of thoughts being transformed that you kind of sense there's going to be this moment or period in time not too far in the future, and I'm not asking for predictions here. That's not where I'm going with this. But you sense that this is starting to really, it's starting to work, it's starting to happen?
Well, I really talk about transformational thinking as a way in which we can refine our thinking process and that we can better utilize our thinking mind. And, you know, if we've got a lot of clutter in there, we don't really make much room for visions and even prophecy, you know, which is part of what you're asking me. I think that when we unclutter and we unburden and we unfetter our thinking mind, I believe we open ourselves up to higher forms of consciousness. And that's interesting to me because, you know, so often people spend time in what I call the area of useless thinking, which is really oftentimes stemming from survival needs. And for me, that's a little bit more of the, I don't know, the hunter and gatherer consciousness, you know, that we have to go out and kill for our food and be on high alert that a saber-toothed tiger doesn't come out and kill us. Well, we've come a long way from that. And so much of the survival needs or what we think we need to keep our minds occupied on, I believe, is a more baser or lower level of consciousness. And we really, you know, sell ourselves short in the thinking department, because if we raise our consciousness and heighten our awareness and clean up, you know, what I call in Says Who, mental cleanup, and open ourselves up in a more expansive way, we then can receive, you know, what some people call downloading, if you will. Mm-hmm. We are vessels. We open ourselves up to receiving these messages, these, you know, wisdom nuggets, if you will, and that we can suddenly see the world in a much more expansive way. Mm. And I find that, again, very exciting. I am amazed that people get so caught up and so tripped up in the minutiae of everyday thinking. Do you know? And what you do is you end up being on the hamster wheel, which I talk about in Says Who. You know, you get caught up in this, like, chasing your tail about what feels to me like small thinking. Do you know?
Yeah.
And again, I feel like we sell ourselves short. And that's why it's important, first and foremost, to be aware, which is the mindful awareness of the thoughts that we hold in our mind, so that we can begin to let go of a lot of those useless, petty, baser, grosser thoughts that are taking up a lot of time.
Yeah. Hunter-gatherer is so 20th century, you know. But
it's an old mindset.
It is. One of the things that actually came to mind as you were describing this, because the paradox that exists in the concept of raising our consciousness and raising the consciousness of the planet is the fact that, on the one hand, many others of like mind, we want a different world. We want a better world. We want a world that's beneficial for all, not just a select few. And at the same time, we also have to deal with the issue of free will, that each individual has to choose whether or not they want to raise their consciousness. And as you and I, are doing this, it begins to, and again, this is part of the paradox, begins to show the vast difference between a higher consciousness way of living and that hunter-gatherer mindset.
Mm-hmm.
And what the image came to mind was floodwaters, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
Not necessarily destructive, but that higher consciousness is like this massive amount of water flowing not only down the mountain and over a fall and down into the river and so forth, and that the riverbank begins to decrease. The river begins to widen further and further as the waters flow down that river. And that the people who live along that river, they have a choice. They can stay there and deal with this water that is going to basically consume their home and everything that they own, all of their stuff, and potentially their lives, or they can move. But again, that's their choice. And so I'm wondering if my analogy is a fair one. Those people who are still playing with the same old, archaic, and non-sustainable rules or ways of living, they can continue to do that. And in one sense, they're going to be washed away in a manner of speaking, in a metaphorical way, by the rising of the consciousness. Is that a fair analogy?
Yeah, and I like your analogy and metaphor. I love to use water. I oftentimes use the ocean as a metaphor, that life is like an ocean. Sometimes the waters are rough and choppy, and sometimes the sea is calm. And we have to learn how to navigate those waters. So instead of just, you know, putting oneself in, and I also like talking about choice and free will, because, you know, there's a lot of victim consciousness out there. You know, a lot of people feel that life is doing something to them, you know, as opposed to what can I do with my life?
Mm-hmm.
I am writing this story. I am writing my life story. I am, as I say in Says Who, you are the creator and master of your internal dialogue, which creates your reality. Do you know? And if you put yourself in that powerless position or victim, you know, consciousness and keep yourself there, then you're always going to be tossed around by life and, you know, end up feeling a lot of the times that you're in the spin cycle of a washing machine. Do you know?
Yeah.
So the idea of choosing, the art of choosing, and bringing it back full circle to the thinking mind, you know, that we can pick and choose our thoughts carefully, mindfully. You know, I use the word curating a lot. Curate the thoughts that you want to hold in your mind. You know, similar to when you go to a gallery and you see a beautiful exhibit of an artist, what you see is this beautiful array of art, the best of the artist's work. Do you know, that's what I really offer up to people to hold in their mind. You know, you can pick and choose. You can curate the thoughts that you want to hold in your mind. Now, people might go, well, how do I do that? You know, I have so many negative thoughts. I have the inner critic and all the things that I hear, you know, constantly. Yes, we do. But you have a choice in the matter. I have a very simple technique in Says Who called the release and replace method. I just used it. It's always a crowd pleaser. I was at 1440 Multiversity co-teaching a course there, and I had people write down one thought. You know, many people go, can I write more? Because people have so many negative thoughts. I said, write down a thought that doesn't please you. Write down a thought you don't like. And people write it down. I say, now crumple it up and throw that across the room. And they do it with so much energy. And I say, now, do you want to pick up that piece of paper, uncrumble it, and keep it? Meaning, do you want to bring that thought back into your mind? They're like, oh, no, 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 no. No, I don't. You know, and then I say, now I want you to write down its positive counterpart. And they're writing so fast, you know. And I say, do you want to crumble that up and throw it across the room? And they're like, no. So these are techniques that really, I think, draw the point home that really, really, you don't think you have a choice in the matter? You don't think you're in the driver's seat of your own life? If you really think that way, you need to ask yourself why. You need to ask yourself who is running the show in your mind.
Mm-hmm. You know, the last presidential campaign brought back visions, not great ones, of a period in time I thought we had finally transcended. Again, we're working on raising the consciousness. And all of a sudden, I heard the messages, but the message that I was hearing over and over again, no matter what words were used, was, we're a victim. It's their fault that we have the problems we have, and da-da-da-da-da-da. And I'm going, wait, we're not victims. This is the 21st century. We've transcended that, I thought.
Thank you, Richard, for bringing that up, because that, again, to me, brings it back to look what's being done to us.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think we need to look at the outward manifestation of what exists and to take some responsibility for it. That's why the inner journey, I feel, is so important. That's why diving to the deep waters of your being, of your psyche, of your shadow is so important. You know, this not wanting to look at yourself, this not wanting to do the inner journey, this not wanting to really own who you are has got to stop, because all we do is project it outside of ourselves, and that's how we get these horrific dark manifestations that we suddenly go, oh my God, how did that happen?
Yeah.
Gee, how did that happen? How did a Nazi Germany happen?
Yep.
You know, where was everybody? Where were they? How there were you? How awake were you? How many veils of the false self did you have in front of you? I mean, let's wake up, shall we?
Yeah, yeah. I couldn't agree with you more on that. And this again goes back to that same analogy. It's okay, those people who want to continue to play the victim role, well, there are more and more people who are jumping on the bandwagon, if you will, and it's not just a bandwagon, but nonetheless, of saying, look, I'm tired. I mean, I tell people constantly, I'm tired of the dualism. I've had enough. This is ridiculous. And I realize that for some, they will say, well, yeah, but that's the world we live in. I said, no, it's not. And then I'll use the example of the macrocosmic and microcosmic example to say, no, we're not. It's our perception that there is actually dualism when, in fact, this is just the way it is. Nature, talk to me. What is the lesson, if you will, from nature? I say that she is our greatest teacher if we would just sit in the desk and listen.
Oh, yes, she is. Oh, yes. Yes, she most certainly is the great mother.
Mm-hmm.
She is divine, and she is many things. She's divine, and she's wrathful. You know, she shows us all, and, you know, you talk about the dualism. She shows us of what is, you know, and that is that, of course, there's the benevolent nature of nature, and there's the wrathful benevolent, you know, call it nature, call it the gods, call it beneath, call it, you know, above, below, wherever it is, it's all existing simultaneously. But I think that, you know, and I am a very concerned about the environment, and I think that we have harmed her. We have brutally hurt Mother Nature in so many ways, it's hard to wrap our minds around it. And I look at nature in a very Taoist sense of nature as it flows most naturally, nature in her most inherent truth, in that, you know, to me it's like watching a stream and seeing the water run down it, or a river, do you know, and knowing that we can't, I love that Buddhist saying, you know, you can't rush the river. It has its own flow, it has its own current. And there are things that we've done to this planet that is really tragic, do you know?
Yeah.
You know, it's look at the oceans, you know, and look at the pollution and all of that. So the essence of nature, where she is most beautiful and divine, to me, is when I look at an ocean. I have a place by the beach. The minute I open the door and I see the light sparkling, you know, on the ocean, it just takes my breath away. And it connects me to my core self. And again, this ties into Live True, which is about connecting to the core essence of who we are, our true nature, our Buddha nature, you know, how we come into the world as these pure beings, you know, the essence, the divine essence of us. So nature, it's important to look at where the environment is in dire crisis right now. It is. There's no doubt about it. But when you ask me, what do we learn? We learn about the natural flow and evolution of nature, and that's inevitable, and that is the life cycle. Do you know that nature changes and evolves, and there are durations of time that exist in its most beautiful form, and then destruction is part of that? Do you know that is the life cycle, just like we have a life cycle? And where my personal learning of it is that when I feel most connected to my true authentic self, when I feel a non-separateness to oneness or unity consciousness, is that when I feel that I'm in flow with my true nature. And I think that we need to look at whether or not we are in flow with the true nature of the environment.
Yeah. Well, I again could not agree with you more on that, because it's one of those things that I I struggle with. And I will tell you also that this aspect of, for example, people want to there's a whole segment in our society that says that the science that is being used to support the whole changing of our climates and our environment is flawed. It's wrong. It's politically manipulated. And I sit here and I go, all right, I don't have a problem with your argument over the science. Then let's throw the science out and let's discuss this from the standpoint of our home. And I even put this in the context of a gentleman who's married. And I say, you know, your wife, you know, she hopefully you participate in this too, so we're not so sexist. You clean your home. My wife and I, we clean our home at least once a week when, you know, on the weekends we pull out the old vacuum and we do the rugs and we change the sheets and we do make sure all the dishes are done and this and that. And we clean the place up so that it's nice for the following week. Well, why the heck do you do that? Well, because we like to have a nice clean place to live. I said, right. Well, but you're telling me that it doesn't matter if we do that to the earth. So if I want to bring the garbage that I've collected over this past week, rather than taking it out to the bins where Marburg will pick it up, I'm coming to your house and I'm going to toss it in the corner over there in your living room because it doesn't matter. And I'm using your philosophy to tell you that it does matter. Mm-hmm. Forget the science.
Right.
It does matter.
We get very caught up in, you know, we want empirical proof about everything. And, you know, we don't accept that which is invisible. And for me, I respect science. And I think that what research has showed us through science-based facts is important. But I also think that there's an area of life, the numinous, the invisible, the mystical, that which we can't always see, that we also need to honor and respect,
mm-hmm.
and trust that it has great messages and learnings for us too.
Yeah. I could not agree with you more on all of this. I wish that people would begin to understand that this is all we've got. I'm thrilled about the concepts of Elon Musk wanting to travel and into space, and we want to go back to the moon, and we want to then go on to Mars and so forth. But it's not going to help if we don't take care of, for example, in my first divorce and only divorce that I will ever have in my life, my wife made a comment to me and says, well, you know, you're going to just take the problems that we've had and you're going to take them into the next relationship. And I thought, well, there's a certain element of truth to that. By the same token, I'm not done working on myself. Okay. Well, the same truth exists when it comes to our home and traveling. If we don't take care of ourselves here now, no amount of planets out there is going to make a hill of beans worth a difference. Ergo, the higher raising of the consciousness.
Absolutely, without question. We have work to do here.
Live true.
We don't want to destroy. Yeah, live true.
Live authentically. That's another definition we're going to save for another time because we're fast approaching the end of our program. Unfortunately, I want to remind our listeners, Live True is the title of the book. It's available not only at Amazon and other locations as well as the website ifftt.org. Stands for The Institute, and actually it's the IFTT.org, the Institute for Transformational Thinking. And that's where it begins, folks, when we start thinking of a better world. Start small. Don't start big like, I want to transform the globe. I mean, which is a great concept and a great thought, great idea. But take it in little bite-sized pieces. Sometimes when I've got projects around the house that are just huge, and my wife is always telling me, says, now, whatever you do, don't hurt yourself. So, you know, it's the old, regardless of what it is I'm doing, even if it's not with a saw and a piece of wood, always measure twice. So you only have to cut once. So I try to do everything efficiently. I try to allow gravity. I try to use gravity in every effort that I can to move things around and what have you. And to try to make my life a little easier so I am not in any kind of pain at the end of the workday. But I thank you so much because this has been a joy. This has not been work. This has been fantastic. And I want to thank you so much. And I'm hoping one day we get to meet in person here in Santa Barbara. I'd love to have you in studio to talk more.
Absolutely. I would love that, Richard. And thank you again for having me back again. I enjoyed it just as much as the other two times. And I know that I'll enjoy it again.
We will. I guarantee you we'll have you back. I guarantee you.
Thank you.
We'll actually set it up fairly soon so we can have you back maybe during the summer of 2019. We'll talk more about this. And a reminder that this interview is on a podcast as well. So we encourage you folks to check it out. Aura Nadrich has been my guest, and again, Live True is the title of the book. The website, once again, the Institute for Transformational Teaching. And Aura, I'm going to ask you the same three questions that I asked you because, yay, sometimes the answers change before we wrap up here, and then I'm going to have to let you go. But again, thank you so much for giving us so much time.
Thank you for having me.
You bet. First question is, who is Aura Nadrich?
Aura is light, love, truth.
What is it that you hope to or want to achieve through the work that you're doing now?
To have people awaken to their love and truth and light.
And finally, what is your life's purpose?
To share life, love, truth, compassion with others and the world.
Aura Nadrich, again, thank you so much. I really do appreciate it. Thank you for being with us as well, listeners. And I'm Richard Dugan. This has been Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World, giving you choices and knowledge of those choices to help make your dreams come true. Until next time, love, Talal.